Welcome to the Shepherd Leadership Podcast, where we hope to encourage and equip leaders to help those entrusted to them thrive and to be a leader others follow for life. My name is Nick Westbrook, and I've had people entrusted to my care professionally for over 20 years in careers from ministry, coaching football, and business development to now owning and leading a Chick-fil-A franchise with over 140 team members. Leading my business at Chick-fil-A is the most challenging, difficult, and rewarding thing I've ever done. The challenges can feel overwhelming, but the call to lead and being given the responsibility to steward so many people's lives and experiences is an honor that I'm proud to shoulder. I've had more leadership failures than success, but from my greatest leadership failures, I've learned the true art of fulfilling my calling to lead. Thank you for joining our conversation where we will unpack the calling of leading as a shepherd and talk with other shepherd leaders about the impact they're making in their organizations. We post a new 30-minute episode on the first Friday of every month and sprinkle in some bonus content along the way. We hope to make this time valuable for you and to encourage you. This is the Shepherd Leadership Podcast. Well, welcome back, Shepherd Leaders. Really fun episode today. So they say that to become a Chick-fil-A operator, it is more difficult to become a Chick-fil-A operator than it is to get into Harvard or be selected by the CIA. They say about 80,000 applicants a year. They select about 100. So if I were to tell you that we're getting to talk to a guy today that has helped produce, shepherd, and develop 13 Chick-fil-A operators that have been selected out of his shepherd leadership among them, I bet that you would turn the volume up, lean in a little bit closer, and say, my goodness, I need to learn a little bit about what this guy has to say. And my friend Alex Van is on the podcast with us today, and I'm super pumped to just sit here and be a student and learn from him. Alex, thanks so much for joining the Shepherd Leadership Podcast and spending some time with us today. I mean, you're no stranger to the people at Chick-fil-A, but outside of Chick-fil-A and the other people that listen to this podcast, introduce yourself, tell us about how you became to Chick-fil-A, how you became an operator, and what that journey has that long journey has been like since you became an operator, buddy.
Well, thank you, Nick. It's an honor, privilege to be here with you and your audience on the Shepherd Leader Podcast today. I mean, first of all and foremost, I just have to say, you know, I actually saw you in the gym this morning, and for your listeners, and maybe I don't need to know about your personal life, but man, Nick is a grinder. I remember meeting you years ago, and I think you were just in operator training at that time, and for a mutual friend of ours who you were training with, and man, you're just full of energy, full of life and activity, but you hadn't quite learned how to be an operator yet, right?
That's true, yeah.
Very green.
But I would just say, man, from where you are now, there are very few operators that I could go work for. I could go work for you.
Oh, that's kind.
And so you are a leader who is worthy to be followed. And so when I think about the leader-follower exchange, you were the type of leader. In fact, this morning, I was on a treadmill, and then you were over there just grinding on the weights. And then you get on a treadmill. I don't know how it's possible, but you passed me on the treadmill. All right? And so you just turned that speed up. And I'm like, man, this old man's got to get moving.
Well, that's funny.
You know, I think I am probably one of the most unlikely Chick-fil-A operators.
Wow.
And so when we talk about shepherd leading, I would say my life in Chick-fil-A really as an operator boils down to one verse, and that's Romans 11:29. And the Bible says, for the gifts and the calling of God are irrevocable. Mm-hmm. And so in my life, I had worked, grown up in the Dwarf House system at the time, met my wife at the busiest Chick-fil-A at the time, the Fayetteville Dwarf House back in the late 90s, early 2000s. I mean, Chick-fil-A was not a national brand at the time. It was a very regional brand. Mm-hmm. And the store that we worked at, Dan lived on one side and Truett lived on the other. And so, you know, for us, it was just a different experience. There wasn't, you didn't grow up to become an operator to have all this freedom and all this money.
Yeah, and Truett is our founder, and Dan is his son. Yeah,
so I'm sorry, Truett Cathy lived on one side, and Dan Cathy, your listeners can look them up if they don't know who they are.
Yeah.
No, but the founder of Chick-fil-A, and then the ultimate CEO of Chick-fil-A, now chairman of the board. And so for us, it was a very different experience. I started washing dishes. And I'll just be honest, I hated it. Like, this was not like, I want to grow and be a Chick-fil-A operator. Like, I just wanted to get out of the dish room, all right?
One more step up. Yeah, I just got to get out of here. Yeah.
No, I just, and sometimes yeah. I think that's what it is. You know, the Michigan football team years ago had that placard on their wall that, or no, I think the story goes that when Bo Schembechler was there, one of the top recruits had a tough practice and just walked off and quit. And one of the linemen walked up on the blackboard back then and wrote, "Those who stay will be champions." Mm. And so we've seen that a lot of different places. But I think so often too many young leaders quit or leave too early. Mm. And you know what discipline is discipline is targeted suffering, right? And so I am going to see an outcome, a desired outcome, and I'm going to pay a price to get what it is. And so for me, I didn't want to be in the dish room. I thought, I'm going to grow up and play football. Yeah. Well, I was limited, kind of, you know.
Well, you played college football.
I did play college football, but, you know, we're not going to talk about that. And, but you know, I just wanted out of the dish room. And I think about so many leaders and in relationships, and we just want out of our marriage, want our kids to get out of the house. We become so self-centered that we don't see really what the future should be. And so that idea that it's not really about me. I mean, I think that Warren Wiersbe did get that right. When in the first line of The Purpose-Driven Life, his first line is, it's not about me. Mm. And so I think so often we just make it so much about ourselves. I mean, many young leaders who, they can't get over themselves.
Yeah.
And so sometimes that suffering, that discipline teaches you to get over yourself.
And we kind of get, we have this, and even as a young operator, you mentioned that, there's so much I thought I was doing wrong because it was hard. And I just saw these other guys and it just looked so easy. And I'm like, well, I must be doing this wrong because it's hard, but that's not true. Like, I mean, it's going to be hard. Just because it's hard doesn't mean that you're doing it wrong or it's bad. Hard is good.
Well, biblically, anything of value requires great work and can be stolen. See, in John 10:10, Jesus said that I came that you might have life and you might have it more abundantly. Mm. And then as he talks about life, this incredible gift, he's talking about the twofold life, the eternal life, and he's talking about the life on earth. But then the rest of that thought is, he says, but the thief has come to steal, kill, and destroy, right? And so anything that you have of value, your marriage, your career, your children, somebody wants to take. Mm. And so that's why biblically, the apostles, Jesus, Paul were always encouraging, act like men, right? Mm. Like there is hard work to be done. Yeah. And so I tell people all the time that in our organization, listen, we're trying to raise men and women, right? It's a stronger community. It's a healthier life. Like that's what we want. But anything that's of value can be taken and somebody desires it. And so if you don't work for it and you don't work to keep it, I think one of the secrets of why we've had what little bit of success we've had is I'm always working like someone's coming to take my job.
Yeah.
Right?
That's it.
And because somebody is.
Yeah.
And I've got to put enough pressure on myself. Mm. And it started back in the dish room.
Yeah.
And so I went home. My dad was a career military officer, army chaplain. My father has a double doctorate, got a second doctorate at 71.
Wow.
So I went home and, you know, 16 years old, I'm washing dishes. I got dishpan hands. I couldn't hold a football. My, you know, it was terrible. And I thought, well, I'm going to quit. So I go home and I act like, you know, Mr. Big Shot. Dad, I'm quitting Chick-fil-A. Like I'm telling him what I'm going to do.
Right.
And he says, no, you're not. No son of mine's going to quit. Get back to work. You want out of dish room, work your way out.
Wow.
And so 31 years later, I'm still working my way as far away from the dish room as I can get.
Man, that's awesome. So what a great story. Sounds like you were shepherded really well by your dad.
I am fortunate. I think that one of the things that has struck me recently when I read the Bible is that lineage was very important in the Bible. Mm. Abraham beget Isaac, Isaac beget Jacob, Jacob beget Joseph, and we have these lineages, and we see them over and over again in the Bible. And one of the amazing things about that, one of the greatest gifts that any testimony can have is to say, I was raised in a Christian home by a mother and father or a mother who loved the Lord and really sought to live out and glorify him and live out his word. Mm. And so I think in my life, we have a lineage and a history in our family where my grandfather, my great-grandfather on both sides, you know, like they loved the Lord, they followed God, and that lineage was passed to us. And so I think that even from a shepherding perspective, mothers and fathers, that's one of the greatest gifts that you can give your children. Mm. And you talk about privilege, man, it's a gift. Mm. It's a gift to be raised in that kind of family. So my dad, I do think that as I got into business, I thought it was going to be ministry. I realized football wasn't going to work out, and I didn't quite have what it took, but I did play 3 years.
Most of us realize that at some point. It's just earlier for some of us than others.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you're, I always said 6 foot, but 5'11 and three quarters. And, you know, we play with cleats and a helmet on, so my absolutely. Coach said measuring that, right?
Absolutely.
So when you realize that's not going to work, it's like, you know, at 19, I went all in. There's some guys on my campus that were really serious, not just about being saved, but about following the Lord. Hmm. Jesus is the Great Shepherd, right? The Shepherd Leadership Podcast. And so these guys were serious. And so at 19, I had a decision. Am I going to continue just to kind of coast, or am I going to go all in?
Wow.
And so for me, it was seeing these guys. One of those guys was the pastor, Matt Chandler, and he was on our campus. And I mean, they were just almost rabid for the Lord, but so zealous, so full of the Spirit. And so it's kind of like, hey, what are you going to do? Who are you going to be? And I realized, listen, I'm just Lord here of my life. And I don't want your permissible will, I want your perfect will. God, what did you make me for? And so I really believe, Nick, that like God made me for Chick-fil-A. God made me a Chick-fil-A operator. And, you know, I think sometimes when God gives you something, you resist.
Yeah.
And so I worked there for 8 years before I kind of surrendered to that.
Yeah. I think that everyone listening to this would agree. I mean, the results that we just talked about, 13 operators that you've shepherded and led to be able to be stewards of this brand, which is very difficult to be selected. You also have 3 kids and been married to your beautiful wife for a long time. And this business that we get to steward, it is a great combination of ministry, of business, of the sports background, of coaching and guiding and what we get to do. So let's kind of move into, man, I know everybody's waiting to know, like these 13 operators that you've produced over these operator long.
I've been an operator for 21 years.
21 years as an operator and 13 folks out of that. So what are some of the principles? You probably didn't start with this idea of I'm going to produce all these operators. You may have, but what are some of the principles that you've led these leaders in and that have really helped shape them to be able to be selected by this organization to steward this brand really all across the country?
One of the principles that obviously when you're 23, you're selected, you're 24 and you're an operator, you don't know what you're doing, right? And so I think one of the principles that we have learned over time, our first opportunity was to open the first Chick-fil-A freestanding restaurant outside of the South in Texas. And so there are no Chick-fil-A freestanding restaurants in California, Chicago, New York, none of those existed. And so we went and opened in Lafayette, Indiana, and it became quickly the second slowest Chick-fil-A in the entire chain. So in our story was we went from the busiest, the Fayetteville Dwarf House, to the second slowest.
And just to be clear, second slowest was not the goal.
No, absolutely okay. Not. We didn't know any Chick-fil-A.
That's really the top of a list, but not the one you wanted to be on.
No, absolutely. In fact, I made almost 3 times as much running that restaurant than I did owning my own restaurant.
Wow.
And so we actually qualified to be on welfare and owning a restaurant. And so, but we knew that God called us. And when God calls you, you can't leave and not give an account for it. And so we knew God is where you called us. You didn't call us to punish us. You called us to teach us. And so one of the principles that we learned from that point pivotal was that we have an organization that punishes pride and rewards humility. And I realized there was too much pride in my life as a leader, and I needed to get it out. I needed to truly learn how to serve my wife, serve my family. See, you said we have 3 kids. We actually have 4 children. And our oldest daughter, we adopted her when she was 5 years old, and she was severely autistic. And she didn't speak. She literally sat in a corner, rocked and growled. And what we learned in terms of shepherding was that her desired outcome may not be what I think it should be, but how do we continue to provide and help people, help those that God has entrusted us to? And so when you're entrusted with the life of someone who really can't do anything and function on their own, you begin to realize like, hey, how do I help this person achieve the best that they can? And so when we talk about developing 13 operators, it's not my desire for their outcome. It's really what is God's desire, because if God's not in it, it ain't gonna happen.
Yeah.
You can frustrate yourself all day long, but this notion, so we go to Indiana, it's where the Lord taught me through humility, man, love your wife. Man, take care of your children. It's not about you. It's about Jesus. When he's in the Garden of Gethsemane, he prays, let this cup pass from me, but nevertheless, not my will, but thy, your will, Father, be done. Mm. See, Nick, when I was thinking about coming on your podcast today, I think about you, and I was going to tell you earlier before we started, but I tried to save it. I think about what the most pivotal change that I have seen in your career and your trajectory, and really what's been a force multiplier in your leadership, is your humility. Mm. The more that you have embraced humility and really eradicated vestiges of pride from your life, the more I have seen God use you, the more I've seen your ideas work. Mm. Right? Think about all the leaders that have put ideas in place that didn't, there was no fruit to it. Mm-hmm. See, Paul says, Paul planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. Mm. Shepherd leaders often don't see increases because they're in the wrong field, they're doing the wrong work, and they think it's up to them. Mm-hmm. What God showed us. So one of the principles is an organization that punishes pride and rewards humility. Another principle is God gives the increase, right? The principle of stewardship. So you cannot be a shepherd without being simultaneously a steward, right? And so what's been lost so much in our society, but what Chick-fil-A was founded on and what a shepherd leader, you have to be a good steward, right? Yes. You are entrusted with the care of those, so your influence, the opportunity, and people. The most valuable thing that you will ever steward are the lives of other people.
Yeah.
And we're going to get to heaven. That's what we're going to give an account for. Mm. And so I firmly believe that. The gifts and the calling of God are irrevocable, Romans 11:29. You can't give it back. And so whether it's my autistic daughter, whether it's the people. So we go to this little tiny restaurant, second slowest volume, which we're not going for. Mm-hmm. Didn't make profit for 3 years.
Didn't make profit for 3 years.
Yeah.
Listen to that, young operators and folks that are in our leadership development program. That's a Chick-fil-A that most people forget existed back in the day, but 3 years, no profit. Those words from your dad, I'm sure, kind of rang in, you're not quitting.
In fact, my dad came visit us at that store, and first thing he did was he didn't say hi to me. He walked around my dining room, and he picked up every piece of trash that was on the floor that I had missed. Now, we're a slow store. There shouldn't have been that much trash on the floor. But another principle that we have in our organization is that excellence is found in the details, right? And that comes from Jimmy Collins, the first president of Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
And Jimmy used to carry around a little tasting spoon that he would actually press the spoon into the coleslaw to make sure the right amount of liquid or whatever, I hate coleslaw, was in there. But excellence and being committed, right? So excellence is a process. And excellence really is reflective of something, an internal work that's revealed through external outcome. People often see the fruit of excellence, but excellence really is who you are. Right. And so moral excellence is what's missing in so many people's lives today.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And so Truett always said three things when he was hiring somebody. So Truett Cathy, the founder of Chick-fil-A, and the organization at Chick-fil-A for a long time really focused on three C's. Character, chemistry, and competency. And the most important was character. Yeah. That if you didn't have the right character, right? So why is it so hard to become a Chick-fil-A operator today? Why is it so hard to be a part of this organization that really focuses on continuous improvement, innovation, and excellence? Because the character. What is aligning your moral compass, right? And so when we look for, in our organization, those 13 that have come, and we've had others that have become pastors and started their own businesses and done other things, just in that, right? Because we want to produce people, right? The joy that I get, and so I don't want to wait until I was a grandparent to have shared joy, right? You see with your grandparents, they get it, like, oh, I'm so proud, and they walk away, right? And so it's like, hey, why don't we just really begin to invest without trying to predict the outcome, right? Man, I'm just on a journey.
Yeah, we shepherd people so that they'll thrive. And it sounds like the goal, as you've been entrusted with these souls that come underneath your care, is just whether it's your kids, your wife, all of these team members. Gosh, I just think about the number of team members that you've, you know, been able to have underneath your care in the time that you've been an operator. It's for them to thrive. And these principles are like, these are principles for anyone, not just a Chick-fil-A operator or not someone that wants to do, you know, go on and be successful in any venture. It's just as a person. Like, this is going to help you thrive as a person. So I think that's really cool. You've taken on, in all that you do, which is so much, and you give so much to your people and your community, but you've taken on several other responsibilities inside of being a dad. I know that you teach at your church. You did mention this, but you steward two Chick-fil-A restaurants. You're a multi-unit Chick-fil-A operator. I know that you're in the process of getting your doctoral degree right now. You know, I'm sure there's several other things that I don't even know about. But a few years ago, you took on the task of leading the effort to organize our operators and our health insurance options for ourselves and what we're able to offer our team members. It was a big need inside of our company at the time. And we're now able to provide affordable, like really premier healthcare options to thousands of employees across the country because of your efforts and your team's efforts that did that. You didn't know anything about insurance before you started that task and you took it on. Great leaders act, right, when they see a need. And you really modeled that and led that for our entire huge brand. What compelled you to take on the task of being a leader of leaders and stepping forward and taking action on this amidst everything else you had going on? And what can we learn from that as Shepherd leaders?
GIOA stands for Guardian Independent Operator Association. So several years ago, things have changed in the corporate landscape that required operators to be able to offer their own benefits and services, one of those being health insurance. And so we formed an association, Jonathan Hollis, ultimately myself, and then later Justin Mize and Randy Smith came together because operators had a need. And I think it's, you know, understanding where God has placed you at such a time and such a need, and is there influence in your hand or your ability? So I think it's sometimes, it wasn't something that we were looking to do, but recognizing, hey, there are some things that we've learned, some things that we've seen, some things that we understand. Is this possible? So I think it began for us by asking questions. And I think a lot of time, we often make assumptions instead of asking the right questions. And so I think for whether you're a young leader, an experienced leader, whatever you are, I think it begins by getting, that's the benefit of counsel, right? Finding trusted counselors or advisors that you can ask the right questions and get the right answers back. And so as we begin to explore this, there was this great need. I think what really drove the need was to hear stories of individuals as we, so now just to be clear, GIOA doesn't serve for the sole purpose of insurance. We have lots of other benefits and services that we offer. Education, there's perks and benefits as well.
My team benefits from all those.
So yes. No, it's awesome. And so GIOA.info is Guardian Independent Operator Association. And just so your listeners know, and we actually named it Guardian because pastor or shepherd was a little too nuanced to say. But one of the ideas initially was to call it shepherd. But we really wanted to guard and preserve, protect, promote, and preserve the biblical principles that we learned from our founder, Truett Cathy. And really, Truett and Jeanette Cathy. The story of the Cathy family is Truett and Jeanette. And Jeanette, a lot of people don't know, she was one of the first women to be accepted at New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary, I think in 1947. Her church actually paid for her to go. So we started that. But we heard from operators, and they told us these really significant stories of their health problems or their spouses or their children's health problems, and this compelling burden to, can we help? And so, so much of being a shepherd is, you know, if you try to help the wrong people for the wrong motives, that's called codependency, right?
It's just
about yourself. But when it's kind of thrust upon you and you have the power and ability, it's, can we help? And so I'll never forget, Jonathan Hollis and I were talking one day, and we had spun some stuff up. He created a website. He put one button, are you interested in doing GIOA? I think you clicked on
it. I did click on that. And I was very interested.
We appreciate that. Man, we didn't know if it was going to work. I actually had this moment of, I don't know if it was doubt as much as, like, you know, Abraham is pleading with God to spare in Genesis Sodom and Gomorrah, because Lot's down there, his nephew, his heir, really. And he says to God, if there's 100 righteous, and he gets down to 10, and he's like, Lord, will you spare if there are 10 righteous? Well, there wasn't. There was only 3. And so I was having this moment where I'm like, Jonathan, we need a group, maybe 40, maybe 50, maybe 80. And, you know, I'm just praying like, Lord, I don't even know. And Jonathan's like, no, Alex, you know, maybe 100. And he goes, pull over. And I said, let me pray. And I said, God, we don't know what you're doing here. And so we prayed, and he said, I just got the number. He said, you better pray again. And the first time we'd ever made it available to any operator, over 800, almost 900 operators had clicked, they were interested. And that's where we knew, where humanity meets divinity is faith, right? Faith doesn't happen just in humanity, and we're not divinity. And so it's the intersection. That's what Jesus shows us. And so for us, it was just this really divine moment. We realized the path forward is very unclear, but we've got to do our homework. So I think a lot of people simply get complacent and they don't work hard. Why am I getting my doctorate? Because I want to keep my sword sharp, right? One of the tenets also of our organization is that we're going to work with the willing. Right? And so what we find is, man, if your heart is hard, I'm not going to work with you because I'm going to tell you the truth and you might not like it. Mm. We want to raise full-grown men and women who can really lead organizations, communities, families, their children, lead themselves.
Yeah, unbelievable. I mean, I have been shepherded so much by you and that team. I mean, just in the providing and protecting for me and my team members in ways that I was as a young operator. I was looking at this challenge that we were looking at with health insurance and thinking, I don't know anything about insurance. I'm just learning about Chick-fil-A. This is the first business I've ever owned. And you guys provided this green pasture. You know, you saw a need and helped provide this thing that so many of us benefit from. So I just want to publicly thank you for that.
I want to say to your listeners and to you, Nick, listen to the people that God places in your life. Mm. And I think for so many married couples who are both filled with the Holy Spirit, you need to listen to your mate.
Yeah.
They see you, they know you, and I know you can testify to this, right?
Yes.
But I go to my wife and I'm telling her about it. We're thinking about spinning this up, and it's a lot of work. I had no idea how much work. But Jonathan and I had a long relationship. I've known Jonathan for 20 years. In fact, Jonathan was a team member at a grand opening when I was a very young operator, and he and I got sideways.
That doesn't surprise me.
But you know what? I realized in Jonathan, what you see is what you get. Yeah. We worked it out. He's a guy that will break the glass, but he'll clean it up and make a stained glass window.
Yeah.
And so he was a man that would do the work.
Oh, yeah.
And so, but in that time, I was like, I don't know if we want to do this, Julie. I was telling my wife, and she goes, you don't have much of a choice. You have to do this.
Wow.
And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And she was also the same person that early on when I was not sure about Chick-fil-A, I thought I wanted to, actually I'd applied at three seminaries. Mm. I was accepted at three seminaries. I thought, hey, you know, I'm going to go win the world for Jesus. And she asked me one day, she said, Alex, does God change his mind? I said, well, of course not. She's like, then why have you told me three times that God told you to go to three different seminaries?
Wow.
And I said, maybe I don't know what God wants.
Oh, yeah. We need some people in our life to help be those bumpers in the proverbial bowling alley to keep us.
We tell our youngest daughter that her older siblings are her guardrails.
There you go. That's funny. That's funny. Well, man, speaking of going into your family, you're a father of four awesome kids. You took on this insurance thing. You got two restaurants that you steward. You're really involved in your church there. I mean, you're getting your doctorate degree. I mean, I've got two kids that are very similar ages of your kids. I know how much running around. You're super involved in your kids' lives, especially their sports lives and their faith and school and all the things that y'all do. I'm just going to kick back and listen to this one because I need to learn. But how do you ensure that you're shepherding your family well, your kids well, as you continue to lead in so many areas? Because those are the first souls that God gave us to steward and shepherd. So I'm just going to kick back and listen here.
I think one of the things the Lord has showed me over these years is that nearly every parenting principle is also a leadership principle. Mm. They're really interchangeable. And why I think there are so few today really transformative leaders is that we have such poor parenting. And it really starts in the home. And so, you know, that's one of the conditions for elders, pastors, bishops in the church is that you manage, you steward, you shepherd your own home well, right? Mm. And so if you can't do that, then everything else is really not working. And so I am fortunate that, man, my mom and dad were committed to the Lord, committed to each other, and committed to the Word. So we had that model. Now, they weren't perfect parents. There's one perfect parent. That's God the Father. He's in heaven. There's one perfect child. That's Jesus. The rest of us, stop looking for perfection, okay? And so I think accepting, and I think raising, getting married and adopting an autistic child, a special needs child, immediately after our marriage. We didn't know how to be married. We didn't know how to parent. And so you realize, hey, you're flawed in many, many ways, and you need help. And you need to learn from those who have gone before. There's no great parent, no great leader accidentally.
Mm.
Anything that's good and excellent and effective really comes to great intentionality.
Mm.
And so you've got to be really intentional. And if you're pursuing your own career, if you're pursuing your own hobbies, you're pursuing yourself, listen, then your family is a distant second at best, wow, right? And so I think for us, we realized early on that we want to make sure that in our home, we do things with our family so that when we're old, I'd heard a pastor say, that you can really tell how much a man loves his wife by how his children turn out, but you can tell how much a man loves God by how his grandchildren turn out.
Wow.
And so I think for us it was this notion that we want to make sure that our family and our extended family and our children and grandchildren, they want to come home. And so what are we going to do early in marriage to really make our home a place that's desirable to return? And so they can go off and do stuff. But listen, if I'm a jerk and I'm harsh and I'm hard all the time and I don't serve my family and I don't apologize, well, my kids, when they become adults, they're going to go, Dad, thanks, but no thanks. How do I continue to maintain influence when my children are adults? See, what happens as a parent, you start realizing as children are teenagers, I'm losing my influence over them, right?
Yeah.
They start to have an opinion.
Yeah.
And they start to express that opinion.
Yeah, and they view all these things that are around them, they start to view, you know, those influences as stronger in their life than what we've been telling them for,
right?
15, 16, 17 years.
Yeah. Right. So I'm super fortunate because not only was my dad a pastor and my dad really was committed and he took these great acts of faith and he would stop and help people on the side of the road and he would give our last dime to feed somebody else. And but paired with that, my mother read us the Bible storybook every single night. Night at bedtime, Mom read us. We got to pick one storybook and then we read out of the picture Bible. And so, man, just hearing those stories of faith over and over and over again every single night, it was an irreducible minimum in our life. There's an author that talks about irreducible minimums. And it was a base level in our life that, man, you don't go any further than this. And so developing a biblical worldview has to start early. And so it's got to start in the home. And if Mom and Dad don't practice this and preach it at home, don't live it at home in front of the children, then why would children continue to stay with it when they're old? There's too many forces and pressure. So, you know, I don't think that we're doing anything that, I mean, and listen, we're flawed. I'm not setting ourselves up as experts, but I think that the work never stops, and it's the most important work. I think having a special needs child really put things in perspective that, A, this is God's child.
Yeah, yeah.
And these are God's children. And he's entrusted me. And so that's the way I look at my team members. These are my chicken kids.
Yeah.
These are I say, you're my son and the chicken. You're my daughter and the chicken. And I tell them, hey, I'm speaking to you as a father. And what you realize is that so many of our young people today don't have voices of truth speaking into their lives. And so my basis, and I believe the basis of all truth, is the Bible. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and life, John 14:6. And so where I don't have to preach to them, but I can say, hey, this is what I believe is true. Here's where I see you, right? Let's identify a gap and let's build a plan to get you there. And so I'll never forget the most recent operator that came out of our organization was Stephen Bruner. And this guy is a G.I. Joe American superhero, all right? He was 10-year Army Ranger, Special Forces operator.
He's a stud. I've got the chance to talk to him. He's a stud.
I told him, hey, you need to call Nick.
He's a stud.
And learn his story. But this was a young, hungry, not humble enough yet guy. Everything in his life in the military, he had worked for, he had done well, he had succeeded. And as a warrior, you need that.
Yeah.
But I kept having the same conversation with him over and over again. And it's like, hey, you've got to connect with the people you're leading. And he had the discipline, but he didn't have the humility. And when you have discipline without humility, it makes you harsh. And it makes you hard. And people don't connect with things that are harsh and hard. This is a picture of Jesus. Jesus was the most disciplined human to ever walk. He never sinned. And he was the most humble human to ever walk. And so leaders need discipline. They need humility. And that's where I see your life multiply. Stephen wasn't there yet, right? He wanted it. He was trying to work to be it. And so finally one day he was frustrated with me. I was frustrated with him. And when I'm frustrated with my leaders, you know what I do? I give them the keys and I walk away. It's not real accountability if you can't really fail.
Yeah.
And so I handed him the keys and I said, this is your restaurant. You're now responsible for everything, including my profitability. I'll see you later. And I left. And there's a little bit of risk to that, but if you have the right people, he came in earlier, he stayed later, and it still didn't work. And then one day I knew it was starting to work. And this is where I knew. He was really busy. It was, I think, in December a couple years ago. I walk in, and Stephen Bruner, he had made a Photoshop of the Bulls team that won championship, the first one, 93 or something?
Yeah, it was the 91 through 96, basically.
He had taken his face and put on Michael Jordan's body, of course.
Yeah.
But then all of his guys in the kitchen, he'd put their faces on the team, and he had set a dream team. And I realized He's connecting with the team.
Yeah.
He'd rolled his sleeves up. He got in the kitchen and he was working beside them. He really had become that shepherd, right? As instead of, hey, follow me, commander, he was a shepherd. And I think we're spiritual, especially Christian leaders, I mean, you have to be a shepherd. Yeah. So the Bible, in studying leadership, the Bible very rarely uses anything that talks about leading, right? But it always is talking about being a leader, right? Mm-hmm. The Bible always is. And so one of the times we see it is where James and John come to Jesus, and they're like, who's going to be the greatest? Who gets to sit at your right hand and your left hand? And Jesus said to them, this is what the rulers, the Gentiles, want.
Yeah.
Right? And he's like, this is not, but those who are going to be the greatest have to be the least. Mm. And so you're never going to find, I heard the pastor say one time, the way up always begins by going down first.
Mm.
And so I just encourage your listeners on this podcast, so often it's just on your knees in prayer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Reset your day every day by confessing. Really, before you go to bed would be helpful. I learned that years ago that I want to confess my sins before I go to sleep, because I was afraid as a little boy, like, what if I woke up and I had unconfessed sin in heaven? And so, but really just committing, right? Yeah. Yes, you have to work hard, but there's a spiritual dynamic in every leader and every person that if that's not cultivated, right? And so shepherd leadership, really, what is spiritual care? It's soul care.
Yeah.
Right?
And it needs to look different than the world's way of leading. We all start with this. We're going to lead the way the influences around us and what this image we think is of a leader. But when we really come down to it biblically, if we're going to be set apart and different from the world, our leadership needs to look different than the world's leadership as well. And this idea of, man, shepherding, as Stephen began to morph and change into that shepherd leader, you know, that helped his team thrive. Alex, this has been a ton of fun. I wish I had a notepad. I'm going to go back and listen to this a ton of times. You do produce some content. I know everybody's really going to go back and listen to it several times and take down a lot of notes, but you produce some content on a blog that you do. Where can our listeners go to find some of that information and learn more from you down the road?
Yeah, absolutely. So I write a couple of different blogs. The first one, years ago, alexvan.com, www.alexvan.com. And then more of a devotional type is where the Alex Van is more on leadership and development, some of these lessons we talk about today. And then where it's really born out of is the devotional that I write is idiedaily.org, all one word, idiedaily.org. And that's more of devotional content, straight kind of my thoughts from what I'm reading in the Bible each day.
Awesome. Well, shepherd leaders, go on those sites. You'll be able to take so much of what Alex talked about today and continue to follow that. Use it in your leadership. Use it to shepherd your teams. Alex, thanks so much for your time today. Thanks for all the investment that you've made in me, both close and from afar, how you've challenged me just with the way that you live your life, and both personally and directly at times. And so I just want to thank you for that. And, you know, being a shepherd leader that I can follow for life. So it's been a ton of fun, buddy.
I just want to say that you're a leader that I look to and that I follow. And I think as you continue to grow in life, you look for people who have the consistency, the humility, the integrity. And Nick, you have all those things. And so for your listeners, I can affirm that, man, you are what you say you are. And that's rare and rare today. So thank you for your leadership. And I look forward to your listeners becoming more and more of those shepherd leaders.
Thank you, buddy.
Appreciate it.